Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Matty B, and I'm very excited about the show. Not only because I'm in my Top Gun hat after another successful fantasy football draft. We're going to get to that later in the show with the NFL stuff. But college had such a big weekend that I'm finally excited just because of how Deion Sanders had his team show up to play. Because for the entire year, we have heard about how bad his team is going to be. The media was like, they're undisciplined. They clearly never watched any of his teams, right? You could tell by the snark. And him attacking them in the press conference after they upset TCU. If you're listening to this, I assume you know that they upset TCU. TCU lost a lot of players, but they were runners-up last year. And he had his team ready to play. And now you see all the articles about, like, Deion Sanders, that win is going to be the death of college football because now coaches are just going to be going after transfer portal guys. Look at what Florida State was able to do with, like, the Michigan State transfer, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit. And I don't care. Like, they already opened the rules. If the NCAA wanted to step in, they could do it. But you can't tell me, because for years we've heard about, well, we need new teams being good. Guess what? Now we have one. Colorado hasn't been good. They haven't won a national championship since 1990, and it was a split one. No one really, they only make fun of that whenever it's like a Michigan one, not anyone else. But they split with like Georgia Tech. So Deion comes in, everyone tells him, well, he can't win there, can't win there. He had been tied to the job in LSU when they hired Brian Kelly. And I think it was like Pat McAfee showed that interview with him because he was tied to that one and he was tied to the West Virginia job. And he came in and basically told them, I'm bringing in my own guys. This is how I do it. It might rub things the wrong way. And LSU was kind of like, well, we're going to go for like a bigger, more established name, got Brian Kelly or whatever. And West Virginia was kind of like, no, we don't like feel comfortable with that. I bet they're regretting it because they got trounced by Penn State over the past weekend. And now Deion's team is ranked in his first year. I was joking with you because like it's hard to beat a ranked team. Up until Mike Norvell beat LSU for the second time, he only had one ranked win in 3 years. Deion got it done in 1 week. So for him to come in with all the media negativity saying about how his team's not going to be good. They're not going to gel. I even talked about, I was concerned just based on the team chemistry because in March, or like, well, I think it was around April, he had taken transfers, including one from Michigan, and some of them got pushed out. And I wondered, like, that's going to be tough if you're taking guys that were contributors, like a guy that had an interception in the Ohio State game at Michigan, and you're pushing them out before even coming to training camp. But now I'm thinking that those guys were pushed out because they didn't buy in. Because his team looked disciplined. They looked like a team. They were celebrating together. They were picking up their like little running back guy that committed after he was committed to Notre Dame. Was it Edwards, I think? Dylan Edwards? Maybe. He's like a little burner. And he was originally committed to Notre Dame, flipped. Everyone was saying, like, oh, it's not going to last. He can't just flip these guys. But if you're going to flip recruits, get skill player guys. The rest of it might not work out this year because they looked small. Like, if we're being honest, they didn't look like they would have held up against one of the big boys. But they don't have to. They don't play them. Luckily, the only big boy recruiting program that they play is USC. And they've transitioned to the Lincoln Riley, let's not play defense. Can you imagine how high scoring that game might be? It's going to be awesome. Oregon used to, I don't know what Oregon's up to these days with all their coaching changes. So I think they play them as well. But all the pundits were just trashing him, saying he's not going to win only a couple of games. Like, he'll be lucky to win 4 games total, and that's with the 3 gimmies in the offseason, blah, blah, blah. Or I guess it was, like, the 2 gimmies because they play TCU. Now with this, everyone's like, well, we don't know what to do now. And I'm glad it happened, and I'm glad he called them out, because I saw people, even reporters, like, they're so petty. Some guy was like tweeting at Deion's players saying how, like, how disrespectful they were. It's like, no one cares about you, sports guy. No one even knows who you are anymore. Like, I don't care if you're running for a newspaper. No one reads the newspaper. So for some of these media guys to be on their high horse, it's hilarious. Like, there's a guy, I forget where he is, but in the AP poll, he always has Michigan rated really low because he doesn't like Harbaugh. That's it. But yet, he's an AP voter, so you can see how ridiculous his votes are. And he's not even from, he's like in Oklahoma or something. So it's like not, like, he's so petty from, like, something that probably happened in the NFL. Right? Maybe the Niners killing the Cowboys or something. And he's so mad about it that he's going to just knock Michigan down, even though they're beating Ohio State and everyone. They're like, oh, it doesn't matter. Rank them 28th. I'm not even going to have them on my poll. It's like, all right, buddy. All right. And so having these media guys, like, I can't wait. That's why I always joke about, like, the media poll. Even the coaches' poll is just as dumb. At some point, they're going to have to just flip, and it should just be an online poll where, like, anyone can vote, because the more votes you have, the better. And if someone's going to vote, like, ridiculous, then they can get, like, voted out. But, like, having just a handful of voters that can be super petty just makes me laugh. And I'm glad Deion's proven them all wrong, and I'm glad he's calling them out, because some coaches can't do that. And I hope that the NCAA doesn't attack him like they did Harbaugh, because there was a period, at least with the Big Ten, where they were blatantly making up calls against Harbaugh, including, what was the one where Harbaugh had that great design, and it was like the tight end was out wide and the other guy went in motion, and they said that they called the penalty intent to deceive, which isn't a penalty. They made it up. So you can't just, like, if a conference is going to make up penalties, then they have a vendetta against the coach. And I hope that doesn't start against Deion, because that's one of the things that really, I think, turns people off on college football. Whenever you turn in from the NFL, where it's all kind of like, yeah, there are some weird calls and stuff, but, like, having just weird stuff like intent to deceive happen, and, like, some awful spots for no reason, like, it's very clear that this could be rigged. And maybe it's petty personal stuff, I don't know, but I'm glad it's not just Harbaugh anymore that's bucking the trend of coaches. Like, what was Shano? Did you watch the Rutgers game? Shano came out of halftime and they tried to interview him, and he said, we got 6 points. And then the announcers were laughing. They're like, oh, what a classic line. I'm like, classic line? That was the dumbest response I've ever heard in my life. Like, if I was a kid, if I was a parent at home and had a kid who was in a draft, I'm like, you're not playing for that guy. That, how uncomfortable and awkward that thing was. Like, I know some coaches, like, make funny stuff or whatever, but at least open up. Like, or just don't do them. Like, Harbaugh skips them now and lets the players do the interviews, which I really like. And what is the one lady always tries to chase him down. I can't remember if it's, like, Molly McGrath or someone. He always ignores her, which makes me laugh so hard. But, like, Deion, he probably has the receipts. He knows who's writing trash on him. Why would he interview them? So, what do you think about Deion? Any thoughts?
I mean, I think when you look at what he did with his roster, we've joked consistently about Florida State and Mike Norvell being the portal king. On this year's roster, Florida State has 26 players on there that were transfers in from the portal. When you look at comparatively, you have a team like LSU that they played. LSU took 29 kids from the portal. Colorado had the most. They had 56 players pulled from the transfer portal. So what Deion's able to do this year has been immediately affected by the ability to use the transfer portal. And I tip my cap to him, because to a lot of coaches like Dabo Swinney at Clemson, that he refuses to adjust to the times, he's going to get buried for it. Like, I know he has his high horse that they have their own recruiting system and they do their own evaluations and they stand by the players they recruit. But if you do that, two things come into play. Number one, are you paying players the right amount to get them to commit to your campus? And number two, if you're putting the, if you're bringing these guys in and your evaluation is off on them and you're not cycling people through the portal, now that creates a bigger problem. Because if you have a need, say a wide receiver, and you don't hit that prospect that you want, and now you have a glaring need, you get a look at what Clemson did against Duke, where they're lining up guys that were really small and undersized, and like even the announcers were making comments about it. So I feel like if you follow that route, and Clemson's had a window where they probably could recruit whoever they wanted and had a legitimate shot at it, I think that window is passing. And when you have something like Deion at Colorado, that he's pushing the playing time, the NFL connections, he's doing things that's going to attract recruits there. And the same looks that he was getting at Jacksonville State, or at Jackson State now, he's at Colorado, he's showing that he's taking it from the HBCUs and applying it to the Power Fives. So I think all he's doing is he's just showing he's able to take advantage of what existing rules are there. He's willing to be unconventional, and I think you're going to see that paying dividends.
So I brought up the ranking from ESPN where they ranked the recruiting classes. Florida State was number one, or transfer classes. Florida State was number one, Michigan was number two, Oklahoma three, Colorado four, and then LSU five. The top four teams all looked great on Saturday, right? Other than like Colorado's a little bit undersized. But Michigan looked like it reloaded, just taking, I mean, they were able to like do what you talked about. Michigan's recruiting well at a point now where they're just taking transfers to fill depth. And even though like the one guy, I don't know, I hate throwing people under the bus, but the one guy didn't look as sharp. He was a starter elsewhere. Like, it's good to have a guy with experience come in, even though he was a starter at a different conference, Power Five. And it's like, oh, he didn't look as sharp. Yeah, it's his first game playing with Michigan. Maybe it'll take him a few weeks, but it's good to have him as a backup, right? Like, do you not want to bring guys in? Because otherwise you're playing, you're having a freshman back there. At least this guy had snaps. And the one thing that Colorado that really stood out to me is the media was bashing their program when Deion got there, saying he made a bad choice, he should have waited for a bigger program. Colorado's roster was basically trash. They barely won one game last year. And it's like, well, what did you want him to do? Keep a roster that won one game? Like, they hired him and paid him big money to do what you did, or what you said, brought in NFL guys, brought in big-time recruits. Travis Hunter looked like Charles Woodson, dude. I thought, oh, God, if he keeps this up, Michigan's not going to be the only school with a defensive player to win the Heisman. Because on defense, he was that good. I know he's been in college, what, 2 years?
Yeah.
He's a sophomore. So, like, is that when Charles won his, or was he a junior at that point? I can't remember. But, like, I think they said he had one pass completion against him. He had that ridiculous interception, which basically saved the game, where TCU was down near the goal line. And they tried to just check down, and he broke in front of it and intercepted it and pretty much saved a touchdown, or at least a field goal. And then on offense, he had 100 yards receiving. I thought, man, if this guy... And then he was dancing after. Did you see the memes?
No. Like,
they were making fun of other programs saying, like, the dudes are tired on defense, even with the shortened game time of only 2 hours. And yet here's a guy that played 140 snaps or whatever. He's dancing in the locker room after. Like, not even tired.
Well, I don't know if you saw this, but TCU's coach, they were interviewing him about their preparation for the week and how they thought that maybe players from TCU were tired toward the end of the game. Apparently, even with the heat index as high as it was through the week, he insisted on having the players outside for practice. Like, didn't use the indoor facility. And look, and any of the load management stuff. Like, they just kept hammering away outside.
Who is that, Dion or
TCU?
Sonny.
Yeah. And it was speculated that because they were so insistent on having their practices outside and doing all that stuff outdoors in the heat, that it left players like physically tired for their matchup. And that's why they wore out at the end of the game.
I don't think they really wore out. I honestly think that the commercial time. So this year, we'll talk about this quick because I want to talk about the ACC. So basically this year, the NCAA started a running clock. And someone crunched the numbers. Let me see if I can find it. I think I saw it on the Michigan boards. But let's see. Oh, maybe they don't have it anymore. But so what happened is that there's a running clock. And the idea was it would shorten the game, shorten the series, and do whatever. Right. So by shortening the game, the NCAA is saying
the exception of like the NFL with 2 minutes left in the half or the end of the game.
So average time, I forget who was crunching the game. Someone said they had a clock running for the LSU and Florida State game. Game time was down from like actual game time was down on the TV broadcast to like 2 hours because of the running clock. So you're taking like an hour game, and they said that includes stuff like the TV show and players running out, like in between plays, stuff. Because normally the game's like, what, 15 minutes or something, they say? So you're cutting almost like a ridiculous amount of time out of the game, like 30 minutes or something. And instead, the game didn't get any shorter. The Florida State LSU game was still 3.5 hours or something, like between 3 and 3.5 hours, because there was like an hour of commercials, of flat commercials, not like, hey, this game is brought to you by Budweiser or whatever. They said they counted that as like the game presentation. So just straight commercials with no football or anything else on was an hour. And to me, that's ridiculous. And so when you're talking about players getting like worn down in the heat, I don't know if it's actually conditioning. And I think this is like something that I've been a lot worried about hurting Michigan this year. Is last year they averaged like between seven and nine series of offense a half, right? So you're able to wear a team down because you're pounding them for whatever. This first game, they only had five series in the first half. The second half was like not the starter, so I didn't really worry about that. But so far, they only had five series, which is like a good bit less over the course of a game. So, like, if you're going to pound Ohio State down, but because of the running clock, they're not going to get tired. You're cutting, like, 30 minutes of them running around out of the game. And instead, you're adding in commercials, which is more rest time. So the theory that TCU is tired, I don't buy. I think they looked better. They looked like they had the better athletes. They just weren't prepared. They couldn't, some of their calls on defense reminded me of how Michigan looked against TCU last year, where, oh, let's just let them, let them take the easy stuff. And the game winning touchdown was just like a, hey, let's get a first down with a 2 yard pass. And he took it to the house on an out route in the flat. Like, there's no way they should have scored on that. I don't know what TCU was doing on defense, but it wasn't good. And they had the chance to score. Like I said, they're throwing an interception down at the goal line. It was almost like they were kind of, I don't want to say snake bitten, because the defense just didn't make adjustments. It was almost like they bought into the media hype of, we're going to kill these guys and we're just going to kill them. So we're going to do our own thing. And so I don't buy into the, oh, they were tired, that's why. Like, no, Colorado looked like they were tired and TCU was just going to pound them at the end. And they didn't get in. They threw that stupid short pass and that guy got tackled, tripped up short of the first down stick, which I hate so much. You have a air raid offense or whatever Sonny Dykes runs?
Yep.
Throw past the sticks. Why the hell are you checking down to an out 7 yards before the sticks? Like, if he made that guy miss, TCU probably wins the game. But big props to that dude making that tackle, because he saved Colorado's day and kind of pumped everybody up. Now it's like, well, their defense isn't that good, but their offense can score big plays at any time. I almost wonder, like, Colorado could be run out of the building if they kind of do what Georgia did to TCU, kind of do like the bend but don't break. Like, hey, we'll just let you dink and dunk, and then we'll let you punt it, and then we're just going to pound you in the ground because your defense is smaller than ours, offense, and then it's going to be 30 to nothing really fast. Like, just don't let it, don't give up any big plays against Colorado. Lincoln Riley, call me up. I can give you some tips. Just do like a three-man front. Have all eight guys kind of just back there, not playing like prevent. Do like some type of drop zone. Maybe have like rotate between quarters and like three men back deep, and just fill those zones and keep everything in front of you, and let them try to dink and dunk down the field, because I don't think Colorado can do it. But that's the one thing that stood out to me, is with the game time, you're going to see a lot of big time programs that where the depth in the past used to take over. I don't think we're going to see that happen. Come back in like 8 weeks, I'll probably be wrong. But I don't, with the shortened game time, you're not going to see, well, they just got tired there, right? Like, oh, you knew Georgia was going to pull this one out because they just have more horses. I don't think it's going to happen. And that worries me with, like, the way Michigan's style of offense is.
Well, I do think at some point you're going to see a team, and honestly, one of the ones that comes to mind is A&M, that there's going to be a tight game that they end up losing because of these, like the way that the flow's going with the timeouts and stuff like that, that it's cutting, it's going to cut series from teams. And if you only have four or five opportunities to put a drive on to score, and the other team has eight or nine, your chances of scoring points are going to be affected, that I think you're going to end up seeing somebody get upset through the course of the year as a result of this change in the game management and game flow.
Well, look back to last year, Penn State, Michigan. I think Penn State might have been up. JJ threw a pick six, which hurt him in the TCU game too, where throws a pick six, Penn State has a lead when they shouldn't have been, because their team didn't look like it was together. But because they had taken so many blows in the second half, Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards just ran all over them. And Michigan ended up winning like 40-17 or whatever it was. Like, Penn State made no adjustments. And I wonder, all right, now what's going to happen in the shortened game? Because, like, if you're able to take a lead at the half, are you going to be able to, like, get rolling and be able to claw back? Because, like, what was it? We saw even LSU at the end of the Florida State game. They scored that one touchdown, and it was like they're too far out of it at this point. But if Brian Kelly would have took points in the old game, like, there might have been a slimmer of a chance that they could have come back. But now it was like, oh, this game's over. The Clemson game's the same thing. Duke scored that one. It was like 21-7, and Clemson got the ball back. And I thought, even if Clemson scores here, they're not going to have enough time, which is kind of insane that you can't really come back from a two-score game. Because I remember the past 2 years, Michigan had like a two-score lead on Ohio State, thinking, oh, crap, we're going to give up a touchdown, and then we're going to do three runs up the middle. And then Ohio State was like, you can do three runs up the middle, and we'll let you run for 80 yards and score a touchdown. It's like, oh, thanks, guys. That makes me feel so much better. I'm much more relaxed now. But now it'd be like, oh, they're not going to come back with their dink and dunk offense. Like, are you serious? They're not going to be able to go. Like, you're going to have to make a big time play with the clock rules. Because if you wait till 2 minutes or whatever, you can't just be getting first down, and then like extending the game, right? Because I think a lot of those offenses before, like, Michigan's able to just hit the tight end for first down, hit tight end for first down or whatever, and the clock's like stopping. Now it doesn't do that. you're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to take deep shots. But let's get in the ACC because I want to talk about this. I watched pretty much all the games over the weekend. I thought, besides like a lot of the SEC ones, because they're on ESPN, and what do you know? Spectrum down here had like a weird ESPN blackout. And I'll be honest, I didn't really miss watching the SEC. And this is a little prelude, because I've been telling you that I think the SEC made a mistake signing exclusively with ESPN. Because with these blackouts and stuff, I saw a lot of people say, like, I'm just going to go get an antenna, because then the channel's free. Because if you were watching on NBC, what was it, the Notre Dame game? NBC's recommendation was that if you pay for Peacock Plus, which is like their streaming service plus an extra $9, you can watch the regular NBC channel on your app. And I thought, I can just watch it for free with my antenna. The antenna costs $20 at Walmart. Why am I paying you $10 a month? That's $120 a year to watch the regular channel you get for free if you buy a $20 antenna? Like, do people not realize that? With ESPN, it's like ESPN's asking Spectrum to raise the rates to a ridiculous amount, which I've heard is like almost $20 a subscriber or something like that, which it used to be like $9, which is still high because most channels are like a dollar, if that, like 50 cents for like HD TV or whatever. That's why your bill's like $70. It's because each channel is getting like 50 cents or something. But ESPN was always able to charge more. Now they're wanting like almost a good chunk of the pie. And Spectrum's like, we don't care. Like, your ratings are down. We just don't care. And I don't even think people, like, are people really going to be canceling ESPN? Because I've been saying for the past couple of years, a lot of these big time games are just on TV. Even Clemson was on ESPN last night. I don't know what the ratings of that one is. I don't think it came in yet. But like the Florida State game was on ABC. They got like, was it 9 million, but I think it was 7 million. It was somewhere in between there. I didn't write it down. I should have wrote it down on my list. But it was like the highest Sunday opener, which I feel like, did Florida State play the Sunday opener last year, the same game, LSU? Was that Sunday?
Yep.
So it beat last year. And I thought most big time games, even if you're in the ACC like that, you're going to be on the regular ABC channel. Like, if you're in a big time game, they're not going to shove you on ESPN. The teams that are going to get hurt are teams like Georgia playing a nobody that's thrown on ESPN, or Alabama playing a nobody that's thrown on ESPN. Recruits aren't going to just randomly watch them, especially like if you go to the bar, because I went out and I couldn't watch any of the games. The TVs at the bar had, did I send you the screenshot?
I don't remember.
I don't know if I did, but actually I'm pretty sure I took a picture. So let me bring it up. I'll just read it. It says, our negotiations are about one thing, reach an agreement that is fair to our customers. We understand this is an inconvenience and hope to return this programming soon. We appreciate your loyalty and look forward to serving you. To voice your concerns, go to ESPN, Disney ESPN FairDeal.com. So it's like, hey, we know they're trying to just run you through. Like, are you seriously trying to force this? And that's where, like, I keep hearing people say, like, oh, don't worry, SEC is going to just nab Florida State and Clemson. Are they? Clemson did not look good, right? Florida State looked good, but I'm not sold on LSU, because LSU looked like Brian Kelly.
Yes.
That was a pure Brian Kelly team. And you know how many times I've been bitten because Michigan crushes a Brian Kelly Notre Dame team that's supposed to be good, and then Michigan falters. That, as I watched that, I thought, this is a snake oil game for Florida State. That LSU looks so bad discipline-wise that I don't know how good Florida State is now. And I've seen the pollsters bring Florida State up to like ranked number 4. And I thought, of course, like, who else are you going to put up that high? I thought that Florida State, if they won, should be up there. I think the ACC is in Florida State's hand. I watched a lot of ACC games. I watched the NC State game. I watched the UNC game. I watched Clemson. What was the other one? There's a couple other ones I watched just because being down here, they're on like the regular channels. And they didn't look good. I was very surprised. I joked with you. I said, well, they put NC State on CBS Sports Network or whatever that one is because they really didn't want to see, they didn't want the fans to see NC State struggle with UConn. It would hurt the ACC perception because they struggled with them. And I thought, UConn's not good. UConn hasn't been good. And the announcers were like, this UConn team is looking really good. And I thought, no. Just like when Duke beat Clemson, I looked at their schedule because everyone kept saying, well, they're 9-4, they're good. They really didn't beat anyone last year. Their schedule was just such a cream puff that I don't know how good Duke is. I looked at Florida State's schedule. Florida State could end the year and their best opponent could have an 8-win record, Matt. I thought, gee golly, if Florida State doesn't make the playoffs this year, it's because they choked. And if you're a Florida State fan, I don't know how you're not excited because I don't think they lose a game. I honestly don't. Because of all the games I watched, the only teams that they play with a pulse left are Duke. And I don't even know if Clemson has a pulse anymore. Like Southern Miss, Boston College, awful. They had a loss already. Clemson looked awful. Virginia Tech, they won, but it wasn't really pretty against Old Dominion, 36-17. So is that a score that you should be excited about? No, that should be an easy win. Syracuse, obviously one of the weaker teams in the ACC, like normal. And so I'm just wondering, like, as I go down the schedule, is anyone even going to push them? Syracuse played Colgate, which are they even D1? I don't think they are, so I don't know how, on them yet.
I would say yes, and maybe they're Ivy League.
I'm thinking they're Ivy League or somewhere up there. Duke, we know, they played Clemson. They didn't look like world beaters. Wake Forest was down last year. They lost Hartman to Notre Dame. Florida State doesn't play Notre Dame. Pitt is Pitt. Miami, I'm sure, will be choking by that point. North Alabama and then Florida looked bad. Florida looked almost as bad as LSU discipline-wise. And it was almost like a joke how Utah just ran them over. Right?
It's yeah. Like,
because people were saying, oh, the SEC should have a Big 12 SEC challenge. I'm like, is this what you want? Because in the future, conferences are only going to have one cross-conference game. And if your conference is losing all of those games, South Carolina's losing to UNC, Florida's losing to Utah, right? LSU's losing to Florida State. Do you really want to have that challenge? Because like I saw the ESPN thing because they tried to spin it saying like, well, the Big Ten, they don't really have any teams that are worthwhile. The biggest win is Penn State's squeaked out a win versus West Virginia. I was like, it was 38-7 or something. They didn't squeak that out. They pretty much dominated the entire game. And are you just trying to make up for the SEC's blunders? Tennessee killed Virginia. Virginia had those players that were shot last year. And they were talking about like their program's not even like basically together after that. So is that a big win? Probably not. I don't know. So, ahead. I want to get your reactions on Florida State because you're, as a fan, they looked good.
They looked good, but there's a couple glaring things. Number one, and I've said this before, their season entirely hinges on Jordan Travis staying healthy. And if he gets banged up and has to miss time, I don't know if the other quarterbacks in the room have his level of understanding of the offense to make it work. I've seen it before that if you have that guy, you can ride him all the way to the championship, and it completely hinges on his ability to stay healthy. What we got out of the LSU game was exactly what I had wanted out of it. They hit the transfer portal. They picked up Bell. They picked up Coleman. They were major contributors. And I think like that's the place where you really hit your stride taking that next step. You can fill out your roster in the portal, but I think long-term you need to be able to pick and choose and develop some of the depth within there. I thought on the defensive side of the ball, they did an outstanding job of rotating guys and keeping guys fresh. And part of the issue that they had several years ago, they were so gassed and dead because they had no depth. And the front guys were the front guys, and it was just like three and out, defense is back out there. Three and out, defense is back out there. And it just completely wore them out. There was balance to the offense this year where they were able to put some longer drives on and chew some clock off the clock and give the defense time to breathe. And then when the defense was out there, they're putting certain packages in and rotating guys in and out that I thought was phenomenal. Like to know where their program was 5-6 years ago and where it is now is just leaps and bounds. Like this was watching that game reminded me of, for the better part of my fandom of Florida State, what it was like watching games where you knew that there were athletes and highly talented players making plays. So it was actually enjoyable to watch this entire game and see the difference in where they started years ago to now where they're able to compete on this bigger stage. To me, I feel like if you're looking at what Florida State did and you're trying to apply to the Big Ten or the SEC, what else can you do on the resume of this weekend to better improve your status? A top 10 matchup, you know, LSU was number 5. You absolutely finish them off. And the score would have looked worse had it not been a garbage time late touchdown by LSU.
So this is where I think if you're looking for the future, Florida State should be very concerned. Because as I went through the schedule, LSU, we don't know what they're going to end up ranked. They might only end up with 8 wins and be ranked like 25. That could be Florida State's key win. Because what I saw today, remember LSU, they were getting hyped because of their returners. Last year, they got killed by, I think, Tennessee and Georgia. Killed by them. And they only got the hype because they beat Bama and ended up winning the West on a technicality because of the tiebreaker, I think, right? Yeah. So you're getting killed. They're getting killed by Florida State. I just think that's the team. Like Brian Kelly, when Notre Dame was usually around 8 wins or whatever, they got the extra wins because their schedule was so soft. Where next year, when the Big Ten expands, you're going to have, they would have had 8 teams ranked going in the year. Both the Big Ten and the SEC would have 8 teams ranked. Your team can afford to lose a game. Well, right now, I don't think Florida State can afford to lose a game. Their matchup predictors, 93 basically. What else? 93 for Virginia Tech. I'm trying to see which ones are the best. 99 for that. What is that? North Alabama. So Pitt's a 73, or no, Florida's a 73 in favor of Florida State. They're favored the rest of the way because Florida State or Florida did not look good. So they're 73% favorite over Florida. They're 73% favorite over Miami. Who else? 83 over Wake Forest. There must be 83 over Duke. 78 over Syracuse. So Syracuse is supposed to be one of the better teams. They play them soonish. And then the two toughest games remaining are Pitt, which Florida State's a 67% favorite, and then Clemson, which they're now a 60% favorite. And that one's at Clemson. And if I'm Florida State, I'm worried about the new ACC championship, where it's the two best teams, because you could very well be screwed having to play like a Clemson team that you beat early. Because, yeah, Clemson might have two conference losses at the end of the year, or three. You could end up playing them later in the year and losing to them again in a rematch. Because it's tough to beat a team twice. Now, is that going to keep you out of the playoffs? Because the only team that I see becoming a problem for Florida State is our old buddies Notre Dame. Because Notre Dame plays Clemson too. So if they beat Clemson, and they've looked good with Hartman at QB, I'm not going to lie. They've looked very good. They're 2-0. They've blown out both teams. They play NC State this week. So they have to go to NC State. They have to go to Duke and to Clemson. Those are the key away games. They get Ohio State at home and USC at home. If Notre Dame's floating around with one or two losses up against a one-loss Florida State, I'd be really worried if I'm a Florida State fan.
But the thing is, Florida State has never been in a situation ever where they could lose a game and still be somewhat in the running. And that's always been one of my knocks against the ACC, is that in the Big Ten, you can lose a game and lose it badly and still find a way to backdoor your way into the playoffs. The SEC, same deal. You can lose an ugly game to someone you shouldn't, but have enough wins within the conference that bully your last two or three opponents by 90 points and backdoor your way in. There's never been an option for Florida State to make that playoff run without having to run the table undefeated.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to think. Because like up to last year, Ohio State, like if you lose late in the year, you're pretty much done. But because all the other teams lost, even though Michigan killed them, they still snuck in. Because like USC choked. Clemson, didn't they choke? Because Clemson was right there. They choked. Yeah, because Clemson lost three of the last four games, I think they played, or something like that. They lost a bowl game, didn't they? They lost the ACC championship game or whatever they were in. And then, or maybe they, I don't know, they lost one of them. They lost to USC. That might have been the nail in the coffin, and then they won the ACC. But at that point, it was too late. So, like, Ohio State had a lot of things go right for them. But to your point, you're right. Like, you can get in, and I'm really worried when I'm looking through the list here. The Big Ten, the rest of them did not look good. Because I'm not going to lie, like, the ACC didn't look good. The Big Ten also, their other teams didn't look good, but the top teams looked good, and I'm at the point where I'm worried that we could have a three-way tie. Michigan has to go to Penn State. Ohio State goes to Michigan. I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan loses to Penn State, Ohio State beats Penn State, and then Michigan beats Ohio State. And at that point, what do you do? Like, one team's going to get an extra game, but the weird way the tiebreaker works is, like, crossover opponent ranking schedule or something like that. And it's too early in the year to know how that's going to... I think the early favorite would have been Penn State gets that tiebreaker. So with the late Ohio State loss to Michigan, is it Penn State and Michigan get the nod? If they can sneak two teams in, I don't know how it would work. And this could be a year where if you have a one-loss Florida State and a one-loss Big Ten, or three one-loss Big Tens and a couple like one-loss SEC, who do they put in? It could get really interesting really fast. And I think if Florida State gets left out, I don't see why they would stay in the ACC for another year. Like, at that point, just go independent and try to add.
I just think the writing's on the wall now. It's just a matter of what the right deal is going to be to have them jump.
Because, well, the writing's on the wall for Clemson, too, where you were hot. The SEC's not going to take a loser program, man. They already have South Carolina, right? And I'm not saying the program is comparable. I'm saying the state. Clemson is a small school, like in the grand scheme of things. Even their own like fans talk about how they can't compete money-wise with the bigger schools. If you can't compete money-wise with donors, why would the other conferences just like boost you up for no reason? Your only hope is the Big Ten, I feel. And I really don't think the Big Ten's going to go that way. I think the Big Ten would rather take Georgia Tech and Virginia and UNC if they can. UNC is a wild card to me because they did look good. I'm just used to them choking somewhere, right?
Speaking of choking, did you see Mac Brown trying to choke out Shane Beamer?
No.
It was like the end of the UNC South Carolina game. Beamer's trying to walk away, and like Mac Brown like grabbed him by the throat to like pull back in, tell him something else.
No, I didn't see that. I did see some of this making fun of the way Beamer like tried to do a press conference about something. He's complaining about something that happened in the game that didn't matter. But I'm like, at this point, South Carolina, like, does it really matter? I'm just kind of surprised, like, going down the rankings. Like, we're at a point now where early in the year, it's pretty clear who can make the playoffs. And I think the list kind of cuts off at Oregon, other than teams that could play their way in. Like, obviously, if Duke runs the table or Colorado runs the table by some miracle, they're in. But I think, like, you're looking at Oregon and up where Washington looked killer. And so you have four teams in that group from the Pac-12 or whatever the hell you want to call them. I really don't think – I don't see a way how they don't beat each other up again like last year where the Big Ten only has three and they're all in the same division. They only play once. So you're either going to get two through or you're going to have all three be tied, and then it just depends on how many openings the playoff has. Because they won't jump an undefeated Florida State, nor should they. Like, if you have an undefeated conference guy, now if you have a one-loss or two-loss conference champ, I think the Big Ten gets two teams in again, if that happens. Because they're right there. Michigan's two, Ohio State's five, and Penn State's seven right now. At the end of the year, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, Matt. If they beat everybody else and they only lose to each other, they're going to still be ranked around that same area.
Yeah.
It's just a difference where does Florida State like stay ahead of Ohio State, or do they back in? And Alabama, Georgia, they're bound to play each other if they each win their side, right? So one of them, in theory, should push the other one out unless one, they're both undefeated playing each other and they want a rematch like that other year. But I don't know. I'm pretty excited. I hope that we see some new blood in there. Like, I wouldn't mind Tennessee taking a ride, or even Washington. I mean, Washington's been in the playoffs before, but they have a new coach since then. And, like, I don't want Notre Dame sneaking in. I don't think Texas is another one where they kind of didn't look as good as what I thought they should when I watched that game. And now they're playing Bama, and of course I'm not going to be able to watch that game this weekend. So we're going to see what happens. If Texas beats them, I think that definitely keeps an opening for the other conferences. So if you're a fan of college football, you're cheering for Texas this weekend, because I don't think Texas is going to go undefeated. But they can keep Alabama and the SEC from getting Georgia and Bama both in. Right? I mean, possibly. Maybe Bama beats Georgia and the SEC champ and they both end up with one loss. But if Texas ends up 9-whatever or 8-4, I think that's going to be like kind of a bad loss for Bama at the end of the day when you're comparing them. Let me look through my list here. Anything else? No. Just Florida State, I think. Man, the only thing, what the an only opportunity.
Good thing that if they're going to compete in the playoffs, the biggest thing that they have to control is some of the stupid penalties. And they had some personal fouls and some late hits out of bounds that they were able to brush it off during this game. But those are the little details that I feel like if you're going to be a national champion team and you're going to separate yourself from the run-of-the-mill guys in your conference, those are the things that you have to get better at. You can't take unnecessary penalties or give additional opportunities to teams, because eventually it will bite you in a big way.
Well, that's what Colorado looked. They looked sharp and they looked disciplined. And I don't think anyone predicted that. Like, I knew he was going to have them ready to go. Even Michael Irvin came on, I think, in the pre-show, and he was talking about how they looked like a professional team, the way they didn't waste any time at practice. I've heard the same thing about Michigan's practice. I've heard the same thing about Bama and Georgia's practice, where you know, like, there's no wasted time. Everyone's doing something, trying to get better. And it's not a surprise that the teams you hear that about are teams that are successful. Like, you never hear someone be like, oh, yeah, you know, at Michigan State, they're really working hard together. It's like, oh, no, they're really undisciplined. Who knows what they're up to? I did see a random thing, too, where they said some of the transfer players, if you watch on the team, the guys that are transferring like two or three times, they're the ones in the game that are more likely to do a late hit, get into someone's face. I saw it with East Carolina where a couple of their players and some of their fans were pointing it out where a guy that was with East Carolina the entire game, he hit JJ pretty hard on a sack. JJ got up and like shook his hand. Later in the game, there was like a late hit out of bounds. And that same player came over and like got in the face of one of his guys that was a transfer. And that guy, and there was two other ones that both transferred into East Carolina. And I was thinking like, this can't be a coincidence that the two guys that are the most undisciplined were both transfers from multiple programs coming in. And someone was trying to do a tracker where like, hey, yeah, the guys that are getting penalties at when Michigan State had their transfer palooza, the guys that were getting them like the late hits, roughing the passers, things like that, were guys that were transferring. And now there's a theory, maybe these guys are transferring multiple times because they're like wearing their welcome out. And I'm not saying, because like if they're starting and they're transferring to another Power 5 program, that might be a red flag compared to someone that's just not getting like Stroud, not getting playing time at Georgia, going to Ohio State. That might not be as big as a red flag as someone that's starting and then their coach is fine watching them go to like a conference rival, right? Like, oh, see you later, guys. we'll see you in so-and-so game. Because I was wondering that, and I wish someone would put together like a penalty tracker based on like the players. I know college, like, I mean, I guess they're getting paid now, so who knows, right? But the ones that, if they are getting penalties, is that someone you want to bring in to your program? You can't really rely only on transfers, especially if you're kind of doing like it's going to be a mercenary at some point, right? Is bringing in mercs to help your team instead of bringing in the culture guys. Because I would be surprised if next year, because everyone's saying Deion's going to clean house again. I would be surprised if he cleaned house again. Because you can't build your program from scratch every year. Like, that would be insane. And then he would be pretty much let go after like year five of rebuilding and they never get any better. And they're like, what, 6-6 or something. So I don't care how much money your program has. Some of the guys that are really good aren't going to be transferring. Like, we have yet to see a top Heisman type guy just want to move multiple times, right? Unless it's for like moving with the head coach, like Caleb Williams transferred with his head coach, right? Has there been another stud playmaker like just go to a team because of NIL reasons? It'd be like Marvin Harrison Jr. being like, hey, sorry, Ohio State, I'm going to leave. I mean, maybe Jordan Addison leaving Pitt
and going to USC.
That might be it. That might be the only one I could think of. But we haven't really seen that happen in a widespread thing where, hey, you just finished up winning a bowl game. Now, who are you going to go to? It's like, I've already received 5 offers. I got to talk with my family and see where I'm going to go. But that's the thing. NFL stuff, as we wrap up here, we had the fantasy draft. I was kind of surprised that my man Tom Brady was still in the draftable category. So I went ahead, I picked my man as an honorary captain for my team. When he gets back in the league and he sells his Raiders ownership shares and he takes over the 49ers quarterback job halfway through the year, that pick is really going to pay off, Matt. Because I also drafted George Kittle, so when he's throwing to Kittle and he's like the new Gronk, your heads are going to explode. Because the 49ers traded Lance, which I don't think we talked about. And now they have Purdy and, like, I don't even know who else is on their roster. So when you're looking at the fantasy draft, because now we're starting with the regular season, my new strategy this year, that I did on the call. I know you hopped on the call on and off, but I started to look mainly at depth charts when I was taking my second round guys, because the 49ers brought in Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is not a good quarterback, right? Longtime listeners know that I correctly identified that Sam Darnold was going to be a bust when he was seeing ghosts out there at USC and throwing picks right to the defense for no reason. Because at USC, you're more talented on offense than the other team. You should not be throwing right to the linebacker at any point in your career. So the 49ers are ripe to bring in a guy like Tom Brady off. But I did notice that, surprisingly, there were a couple starting running backs that were listed as number one on the depth chart that ESPN had for very low values. Another one that stood out was my boy Nico Collins from Michigan. He plays with the Texans. I know he has an Ohio State quarterback, and those haven't really worked out in the NFL. But if you're promoted to number one, you're going to get balls thrown your way. So my new tip is to try to look at the depth chart going in when you're taking a flyer on these early, like, rookie-type guys, guys that have only been in the league, like, 1 or 2 years, because at some point, no matter how bad the team is, you're gonna have to draft guys that are actually playing, right? Like, oh, I'm going to draft this guy. Oh, where is he on the depth chart? He's third, but ESPN's really hyping him up. It's like, all right, interesting. My other buddy had a theory that if the team is featured on Hard Knocks, then a lot of their players will be drafted. And that held true in our league, with a ton of random Jets players being taken. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers fell. I got him for $2, I think. Because I thought, I picked Dak, and I thought, well, Dak could get hurt anytime. I'll take Aaron Rodgers, and then my man Tom Brady will be my ace in the hole if I need a guy to play. But any strategies that you were looking at this year when you were drafting, other than making a fool of yourself on what did you draft really high? Kickers for $13? Is that you?
I did have the pick of my kicker. And you know, I looked at with what Aaron Rodgers brings offensively for the Jets, if he can chew clock, then that's going to be fewer opportunities for the defense. So I did go in on the defense just because they have a younger unit. Slay's a defensive-minded coach, and I'm higher on them because they're going to have consistency. I felt like they had a young receiver core last year, and they end up trading some of those pieces away as the year progressed, but it was like they just had so much inconsistency at the quarterback position that they really couldn't get any type of stability. To me, I started looking in years past, I've tried to go the route of holding on to money early on and not setting necessarily price limits for certain people. But I feel like with the way that our league is set up, if you don't splurge for at least a couple picks, then you end up really being in a tough, in a really tough situation. So, you know, I went in going after Josh Allen with knowing that he's going to, unless he ends up banged up, that he's going to be a high performer. And matching that up with Stephon Diggs, it's like there's when they're in the lineup together, you're going to be banking on a bunch of points and hoping that whoever the other team I'm playing against ends up not having as much success with some of their other picks, that it tips things in my favor.
That's where I always go high on running backs. And then I end up with too many running backs this year. And I'm like,
I've done that too, and I try to balance it out by going more with more receivers.
But historically, I've been able to pick up receivers for cheap. Same with tight ends. But tight ends, the difference between a good tight end for price-wise. Because I told you I was going to draft Kelce no matter what. And he went up to 61, and I couldn't afford it at that point because I had already drafted Eckler and Jacobs and I got Devontae Adams. So I got three solid guys. I know two of them are Raiders, which I kind of hate doing. But I got Cooper back for kind of cheap, and I got George Kittle. So to me, I have five solid, should be top 10, maybe for most likely, hopefully top five position-wise for all of those dudes. That's going to be the core of my team. And I got Dak. He was close to top five last year if he wasn't. So if I can get most of my starters to be top five, then I can fill flex out with basically whatever jabroni I pick up, right? Because like there were some guys in our league, like Ronnie Bell, I've been saying, Ronnie Bell for the Niners might start taking over some snaps because he looks so good in the preseason where he's still available. I picked up the Smith and Jigma guy from Ohio State for the same reason. He's like third on the depth chart right now. He's kind of like injured, but he was so good at Ohio State, like talent-wise, where he was getting open all the time. So like having a guy like that, and I was the same on Chris Olave last year, I said, Chris Olave, everyone talks about, oh, he wasn't getting separated, he wasn't as skilled, but his route running was so crisp, I thought, that works in the NFL. And this year, he's going high. He was one of the higher guys on that team, and he's like listed as the number one wide receiver for the Saints. So I think identifying some of those guys that you're like, I watch enough college football that I'm like, this guy can get separation. And if you can get separation in college, not just against like, oh yeah, of course, Ohio State's playing Indiana, their guys are all wide open. Or like Penn State playing West Virginia, the guys looked like the greatest show on turf. I'm like, oh my gosh, that Isaac Bruce wide open down there. I'm like, nah, just some random guy because West Virginia's playing no defense. But if you can get separation on like one of Michigan's D-backs, then I'll give you props to that, right? Because like those guys are also getting drafted. Same with like if a guy from Tennessee is able to get separation on like Georgia's D-backs, I'm paying attention, right? Like in the past, Clemson had these guys that were like Sammy Watkins that were getting open. Maybe they haven't had the best pro career, but as a flex, you're like, I can get that guy. I can get him for cheap, and I know he's going to get at least get a couple catches. It's identifying the guys in our league with the keeper where like people were saying like, it's insane that like you can get Garrett Wilson for a dollar. It's like, yeah, you draft them because no one else is high on him. And a lot of people panic drop the first week, especially rookies. And that's where you can kind of, if you're willing to sit on them, or like if you, I don't want to say luck out with like an injury or a suspension early where you can put a guy on the IR. Because like right now, I'm like, I don't know if Kittle's going to play. I better pick up Juwan Johnson from the Saints. He's always available. He's available all the time. I can just pick him up and throw him in and he might get 10 points. He might get 0 points. I don't know. That's a gamble playing some of these bros on the bench. But I'm gonna be sharing guys that I think can put up big points. Right now, my three, Nico Collins was available late. I told my buddy on the live stream to draft him because he's clearly Texans number one. I'm like, if you're looking for a wide receiver, you must look at Nico Collins because they have like no one else on that offense. I have who else did I pick up? Oh, I picked up Rashad Petty for cheap. And then, I said, Ronnie Bell. I think Ronnie Bell can run routes. Maybe he scored in the preseason and stuff. He was putting on a show, similar to like Chris Olave last year, where at the end of the year with the 49ers offense, you know they're going to spread the ball around, especially if you have a young slot guy like Ronnie. He's going to be checking down to someone, especially if Sam Darnold's in there, right? Because we don't know how Purdy – is Purdy even 100% back? Didn't he get hurt like in the playoffs or right before the playoffs?
Kelsey, it just was reported this week. Kelsey may not even play. You were saying about going all in on Kelsey.
Oh, I know. I saw that report coming in. And that's why I thought I'm going to take a flyer on him anyway, because I thought the rest of my picks were good at that point. But if he ends up not playing, what's their backup tight end? Are they going to be drafted super high? It's like I almost got Juju too. For cheap, and of course the Steeler stands, they couldn't let me have him. But I don't know. I also went high on Breece Hall, which I'm not sure on that pick, because like, yeah, he's good, but he's more of my backup running back. just because I don't know who's their starter, Dalvin Cook.
Yes.
So like him coming in and getting checkdowns from Aaron Rodgers might work out fairly well as like your flex. I also picked up Odell Beckham because I don't know if I trust any Ravens wide receivers. At least get them a big name out there. That's what Lamar Jackson wanted. I like when the quarterback says, I want you to get this guy, he's going to throw the ball to him. He's basically just telling them. It's like LeBron, like, hey, I want this guy on the team. That's who you should draft. Remember, was it the Browns tight end? I always talk about it. Because he like wrote, he was like, his interview was about how they became best friends and started to be roommates. And I thought, I'm drafting this dude. And he was like one of the highest scoring tight ends. And everyone was like, who is that guy that you picked up? I'm like, when he moved in with the quarterback week three, I knew that he was going to start. He's on the free agency. That's why I'm not afraid of wide receivers. Because you can always pick up a wide receiver that just starts to get targets for no reason. But I've been going rookies. Didn't I have Devonta Smith and Olave last year? This year, I'll see if I can bring some other rookies. But that's all I have for the show. Anything else you want to talk about?
No.
You want to talk about Florida State some more? How excited were you during the game?
I was pumped, and I was even more pumped today when I saw that Florida State's in that top four.
I knew there. I wouldn't have been surprised if they were two or three. I didn't think they'd move ahead of Michigan just because Michigan looked dominant, and like you can't penalize them for playing East Carolina. The one surprise to me is East Carolina. They almost beat NC State. They lost by one last year, and they almost beat South Carolina. They lost by three last year. So I was kind of like, are they going to play this game close and watch Michigan fall to like eight in the rankings? But they shut them down completely. And so the next 2 weeks, I think, are nobodies for Michigan with Harbaugh and his dad. He made his dad the associate head coach, which I don't know if I talked about on the show. But how funny is that where it's like, I'm going to be suspended, but my dad's going to coach? Yeah, he won a natty at Western Kentucky. got them to get the call up to D1. Like, who has a coach just floating around like that? It was like whenever McElwain was like the assistant or whatever. It'd be funny like if he just tags in another former head coach. Like, you know, Nick Saban has his rehab thing. Harbaugh kind of has like a smaller version of that. But he's like able to tag them in when he gets suspended. Then he watches the game on the couch. Someone said that he should have live streamed himself watching the game and put it towards the NIL fund as a big like middle finger to the NCAA, which that would have been funny. I wonder how much money he could have collected doing that.
Just sit there and slowly eat cheeseburgers.
Well, you know, he's probably yelling at the TV, right?
Just like one at a time, just like real slow, just slowly eating a burger.
Well, I forgot to mention this. Some of the calls in the Michigan game were so blatantly wrong, I was very surprised. But the most annoying thing was the NBC rules expert, 100% wrong, like every call. So the first one, for Michigan's first touchdown should not have been a touchdown. JJ was beyond the line of scrimmage when he threw it because he was scrambling out. And he could have just ran for the first down, but like very late he saw our guy was wide open in the end zone. He threw it anyway because figuring like whatever, it's early in the game. I might as well take a shot. They reviewed it somehow and said that he was behind the line. He was clearly not. But the smug announcer was like, oh yeah, this is coming back. And he like didn't explain it. He's like, hey, that's it. He's behind the line. Yeah, that's coming back. And then when they announced it, he didn't say anything. They're like, oh, what a surprise. And then the next time, JJ made a jump pass, like the old Tim Tebow jump pass, so he was out of the pocket. Their guy launched and hit him helmet to helmet. A clear ejection, right? Because if the quarterback jumps and you launch your helmet head first into his head, there's no excuse for that. That's not a football play. It wasn't like, hey, I'm just randomly jumping into the air with my helmet that I couldn't stop. So I was so shocked when the guy was like, oh, this isn't an ejection. This isn't even a targeting. That's just their helmets were just incidental there. And I'm like, incidental? He jumped into the air as a pure launch. And the other guy was like, he kind of launched there, don't you think? And he's like, oh no, this isn't a penalty at all. And then of course, when it was a penalty, he was like, oh yeah. I just thought that was a football move, is what he said. And I thought, how could that be a football move? Like, if you're bringing in, and I looked it up, he was an NFL's role expert. If you're bringing in the NFL guy to be your college expert, at least make him watch some college game. Because, like, that was very clear an ejection. There's no way, even in the NFL, that shit, like, if that was Aaron Rodgers, that's what I wish the other guy would have said. Like, hey, if that was Aaron Rodgers jumping, you don't think they would have threw a flag on that play? And he would have said, oh, yeah, they probably would have because it was Aaron Rodgers. Then it's a penalty in college, buddy. Like, now if Brock Purdy's doing that and he's getting hit in the head, maybe that's a football play to you. But you're going to protect your stars. And JJ in a 30-point beatdown taking that hit that shouldn't have happened is like a red flag for the rest. But there was a couple other ones, like the spot found something else that he like was so wrong on. And I thought, call me at home. I'd have a better percentage than this guy. The only one I would have missed was the touchdown pass, because I thought he was beyond the line of scrimmage. Everyone else I would have been 100% on. But NBC didn't tweet me back, so maybe next week, Matt, I'll get hired by them. And I'll bring that aspect to the show. So thanks for listening. If there's anything you want us to hit on, let me know, and we'll see you next week.